Hello, everyone. Welcome. This is the 70th Future of Power gathering, and it's wonderful to have you here with us. I'm going to introduce the two primary speakers this evening. I think you know them well. And it's evening for some of you, it's morning for others, so whatever day part this is, you may know these speakers quite well. One of them is Sister Jenti, and Sister Jenti is the director of the Brahma Kumaris activities in the Middle East and in Europe. She is a frequent speaker on climate change and on many, many subjects, primarily on inner power. And your host of this, these 70 events and whatever goes forward is Nizar Juma. Nizar is a businessman with a lot of experience in the normal ways of power and a lot of experience on inner power as well. And it's his inspiration to hold these Future of Power dialogues and retreats all over the world. So these two people will be primarily with you this evening. I'll be guiding you along. And for those of you who have been with us in the past, you know that this is about the difference between hard power and soft power, or external power and internal power, and the power of this time and the power of the future. So we're delighted to have you with us. I think if you have questions throughout, you should put them in the chat and they'll be fed to us and we will have a time for answering those questions. So I would like to get started here with Nizar. And I just want to say that Nizar has been in leadership positions for over 50 years. And so I want to start by just asking, Nizar, how is leading in this time different from leading in the past?
Thank you, Judy, and hello, everyone. It's nice to be with you again. Leadership has, as you all know, those of you who are leaders, and I don't just mean business people. Leaders are in every sphere of life. There are so many professions, each one has a leader. So we are talking about leaders in general. And leaders are supposed to be those with who are infallible. They have nerves of steel. Whatever comes in front of them, they are not supposed to be disturbed in any way. Also, in the past, leadership was very, very hierarchical. So in America, for example, between the CEO and the messenger or cleaner was 64 different separate slots before you got to the bottom. And then came a time when everybody was saying that this is not right, that we should have a flatter system of leadership. So then they suggest that it should be 3, 4, 5 maximum. And then we got people like Tom Peters, who started talking about in search for excellence and how do we need to give better and better leadership and how do these qualities come and what should we do and talk more to our people and get down to the floor level all the time so that we are in touch with people. We then got Jim Collins who started talking about from good to great and so a series of those conversations. And so we thought that we are really doing good. And leadership is now progressed and we are now empowering people who are under us. And now there is also, Jim Collins has written a recent book called How the Mighty Fall. and this is about the Fortune 500 companies, and basically he's talking about, you know, when you get to the peak, if you don't innovate, then you fall wherever you are. And we've seen so many examples of this happening of late. Now, what's happening today compared to what's happened yesterday? We are seeing that apart from COVID, even before the advent of COVID, so many things are changing in this world. And there is a Hindu mythology which says that there are four cycles, and it goes from gold and silver, copper, and now we are in the Iron Age, which is called Kaliyuga. The Brahma Kumaris also believe this. And Kaliyuga is the Iron Age, therefore the worst time, and so everything is at its lowest ebb. You can see already what's happening to the world. You can see even the natural calamities are happening more and more, whether you call it global warming, you call it whatever, but things are getting worse. And this is the current status. Governments are no longer able to rule. People are changing their governments only to find the next one is even worse than the first one. Corruption is everywhere. And it's just every day we are seeing examples of rulers who are taking charge as dictators of their countries and not letting go. You know yourself that there are hundreds of other examples of what's going on. Then on top of all of this, we now have COVID. And everything has gone really topsy-turvy. Now, what do we do? Today, more and more and more, even as I said, before COVID, people are searching. Where do we go? Where do we look for answers? Because this very uninviting world is attacking us from every corner. Whether it's in your business life, in your social life, in your family life, in whichever life, you have to work twice as hard to stay in the same place as you were a year ago. So where do we turn to? And more and more and more, the answer is that we need to become powerful from within. Today, if you look at the most successful people in the world, look at their biodata, ask them what they do in their time, in how do they keep ahead of what they have to do, and the answer always comes, they meditate. 20 years ago, 15 years ago even, if a serious business person started to talk about religion or spirituality, everybody looked at him with a big question mark as to whether he was a serious person or not, from a business point of view. Today, nobody does this. Everybody understands that we have to find a solution to how do we get over what's happening. And the answer always comes, become more powerful from within. The United Nations, for example, have got 17 things which they advocate is their terms of reference, which they are advocating everywhere. Now they are thinking, a friend of mine the other day sent me an article that is professing that they introduced the 18th one, and that is about consciousness, higher consciousness. Because there is so much negativity in the world today. People are constantly thinking negative thoughts. They are thinking repetitive negative thoughts. And the only way in which we can correct this is because every day when you sit quietly for 1 minute, you have 12 or 15 thoughts a minute. when you are under stress or are in anger or fear, the number of thoughts go to 40, 50, 60. But that's okay. The bad situation about this is that the more the number of thoughts, the less powerful is your intellect. So you have no power to discern, no power to judge. So be as angry and as stressed as you like, but you are not able to make decisions properly because your intellect is not in place. So what we want to do is to bring the 15 thoughts a minute down to 10, 8, 2, 1. That's when your intellect is at its most powerful. This is what meditation teaches you. Meditation teaches you to focus on what's important. Inner power comes from a combination of your intellect with the Supreme Soul intellect, to combine the two and to use that combination in whatever you do. This gives you powerful. This gives you power, makes you powerful. Whoever you are, however powerful you are, you need this inner power if you want to progress and get to a state where you are able to make decisions which are with the full benefit of your intellect. And you all want to become powerful. We all want to become powerful. But power today, which is hard power, the Trump kind of power with guns and money, does not do you any good anymore. Money is useless today. What you need is how to make decisions for you and for your people and for your family, which are worthwhile, which are decisions which will last and which will take you through this time of trauma and any time of trauma. So, how long? Okay, sorry. I thought you had said my time is up. So, this is what we have to do today, apart from the very senior business people who are all giving time to meditation. Now, I have a 6-year grandson who is in school in Sydney, in Australia. They teach him meditation at school. The most popular pastime in Harvard Business School today is meditation. So what we need to do is, first of all, we need to control our thinking. What are we thinking about? Is it negative? Is it neutral? Is it positive? Is it waste? And finally, is it destructive? Because 99% of the negative things that we are thinking about actually does not happen. But we have already made it happen here. And we have got depressed and we are making everybody around us depressed. So we need to think about what we are thinking. In Brahma Kumaris, they call it traffic control. Sorry, they call it traffic control. Because this is the control of the traffic of the thoughts which are going through your head. You constantly need to think about what you are thinking. Because as you do that, then you see if they are negative or waste, then you need to convert them into either neutral or positive. You need to constantly, because what you are doing is that you are not only affecting yourself and getting negative, but you are affecting everybody around you. Because we create the vibrations of everything around us. That's why we all like to go out into the middle of the sea in an ocean liner. We love to go into the bush where there are no people, because that's where we find peace. This is why the serious meditators, they meditate at 4 o'clock in the morning, because everybody who is gallivanting by that time has gone to sleep. Anybody who goes early in the morning to work is not yet up. So the minimum number of people are awake, and this is the best time in which to focus. To focus on who am I, which is I am a soul, a point of light, like a shining star. I live here. From here, I see, I hear, I smell, I do everything from here, the command post. And I am a point of light. I need to practice this constantly so that I become what is known as being soul conscious. The Supreme Soul is also a point of light like a shining star. And what I need to do is that after I am soul conscious, I need to connect, to fuse with the Supreme Soul. And this is the most powerful connection I can have.
Are you saying, this is interesting to me. So you're saying basically that the difference between historic traditional leadership and now is that the atmosphere has become so negative and so degraded that the ability of a leader to have a clear intellect and mind relies on this clearing process you're talking about. That's what you're saying, yeah?
I'm saying that, absolutely, because there's so much negativity, so much improper thinking, so much thinking under stress. All of those things does not allow you to think in a logical way, in a powerful way. And this is the way to do this. We have found this. There are so many experiences of that, Judy, now. So it's not no longer just fashionable to meditate.
Right.
It is become a necessity to become powerful from within. You have to adopt. Meditation is one of the tools. Mm-hmm. What you rightly said right earlier on is that it's all about soft power. And soft power means that I have to, meditation is one of the soft powers that you have to adopt in order to become spiritual.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you do take a minute, since we have 2 minutes before we move on, is maybe you do explain that leaders are facing things they've not faced before, and that we're going to look at a clip that shows that, but that we're facing things that we've not had to encounter before. It wasn't in the job description before.
Absolutely right. Judy, I think that what we are seeing now, you know, apart from all the natural calamities, is that, you know, there are so many terrorists doing what we never expected them to do. What this particular clip that you are talking about one of those happening. In a little country like Kenya, we've had 4 terrorist attacks in the last couple of years, and really, really bad ones. And apart from that, I think you in your own country know, Judy, how many schools are being attacked. Well, you can call them terrorists or not, but they are school kids gone crazy. They get hold of a submachine gun and just go wild.
Right. So, I mean, the people facing this are school teachers and bus drivers and train conductors and hotel managers. And, you know, we're not talking about extremes. We're talking about what's happened to everyday life and what leaders have to be ready to do. And I think that's what you're calling out here, is this real shift in the times that we're in. And if leaders go on as they've always done, business as usual, they won't be equipped. That's what you're saying.
I'm saying not equipped, but also they will fail.
Right.
Because, you know, the old tools that we have used since year dot are no longer functioning. We will not be able to make decisions which are going to take us through all these times, which are very, very traumatic.
Right.
Well, over so to you, I think that my time is up.
Yes. So shall we go ahead and we're going to look at a video clip that helps make this point.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So on January 19th, 2019, terrorists attacked the Dusit Hotel in Nairobi, Kenya. Inayat Kasim, the managing director of the security company Scorpio Africa Limited, was at the scene within 20 minutes. He would rescue almost 200 people that day. From the moment he received the call and said goodbye to his daughter and loved ones and began the drive to the scene, he was in an inner conversation between his mind and his heart.
I was telling him not to go. I was already in a safe environment. Why do I need to expose myself to the vulnerability? But my heart, as many a times as before, I've been part and parcel of the community policing program for over 2 decades. I always live with my heart and not the mind as such. So the conflict ended very quickly between the heart and the mind. I hugged my daughter goodbye, and I said goodbye to my friend, both equally near and dear, and headed out. The biggest issue was, as I was personally sort of going through stuff, moving through doors, corridors, was to identify in a split second, friend or foe. That was quite tasking as such, because time was not on our side. Whatever we had to do had to be done, had to be executed high speed as such. Many a times, the survivors, out of fright or panic, anxiety, freeze mode, it was difficult to communicate with them that we're the good guys, we're trying to get you to safety. But we managed to do that all in a matter of seconds as such. And yes, I do accept constantly in my mind, I thought I wouldn't come back. And many a times I would give myself verbal commands. I would say, today is not your day. Today is not your day. You will not die today. Even the famous image that has been captured with the lady, I was talking to her. I was telling her that, my sister, today is not your day. You're not going to die today. It was more so a verbal command to myself, from my heart, that was leading as such, and to my brain. And yeah, we stayed in the fight and got as many out as possible. So between the two, priority was my heart. I've always been a killer, and I've always done things with my heart, passionately.
Okay, that's a beautiful, powerful clip. And as we said before, it's not only heads of security companies that are having to lead like this. It's school teachers and train conductors and hotel managers and all kinds of people. Violence and heartbreak have become chronic in our times, raising the question about what do we do with the memories in our heads and our hearts? And as leaders, how do we help those for whom we're responsible cope with trauma? So this is an aspect of leadership that I'd like to ask Sister Jenty to share with us about, because it's so important in our time. So Sister Jenty.
Firstly, a greeting of peace to my sisters and my brothers. Om Shanti. And thank you, Judy. Thank you, Brother Nizar. Nizar Bhai mentioned nerves of steel. Now, maybe some people are born like that. Maybe most of us are not. And if I haven't been born with nerves of steel, what do I need to do to be able to maintain my own inner stability so that I'm able to be of help to others in such situations? I think that Nizar Bhai talked about meditation in a very beautiful way. And so I know that to be able to have the ability to go inside is absolutely a priority. And what am I doing when I go inside? And immediately I'll be part of that situation of many, many thoughts coming up. I won't be able to come back to the point of just one thought. And not only will there be thoughts, but there'll be all those images that flood my mind. At that moment, I really need to make sure that I continue to go to that deepest part within myself. And it's not a long time lag to do this. Our brother who spoke about the battle of the head and the heart and what needs to happen and what the heart is saying, all of this comes into play. But I think maybe one of the things that comes up is fear. Can I deal with fear so that at that moment, I know that if I find that point of peace inside myself and I'm able to have even just a moment of stability, I'll know what it is I need to do, what is the way forward. And I think that at that moment, we also have to trust that there will be guidance from above. And if my heart is clean, and my motives are pure, I only want to be of service, I only want to be of help, then I will find that guidance and I'll be able to serve others around me also. Maybe at that moment, there's that extra adrenaline rush that makes me move into action and I'm able to do what is needed in the right way at the right time. We've seen many, many examples of this, that in a situation of trauma, a person who has a clean heart is able to do what is needed. If a person has mixed motives anyway, then you can't trust what's going to happen. But I'd also like to address the situation after the trauma, because now it's very well recognized that after a traumatic situation, the post-traumatic distress that comes in is a huge syndrome that has to be dealt with. And usually it's because we've recorded memories within ourselves. And it's very difficult to deal with those memories. And someone who's practicing going inwards develops a particular skill. And that is they're able to be selective, not only about their thoughts, that's important, but you're also able to be selective about the memories. You know, there's something between my thinking and my intellect in which moment I decide, should I not, how should I move forward? And that is what is imprinted within my own memory. And what's imprinted in my memory are the things that have really impacted me the most. And so what I find is very useful is to be able to be selective. And if there's a button that's pressed in here that creates memories of pain and sorrow and suffering, can I find a way to be able to either deal with those variety of memories and to be able to reframe what has happened and learn from the things that have happened? And can I then reduce the time I revisit those memories so that I'm not keeping them alive and fresh in my mind all the time? The more I revisit memories of trauma, the more alive they remain. And so, yes, I can do three things. I can reframe, I can learn, and also I can make sure that I replace those memories with other memories. So, for example, in the little clip that we saw the panic, we saw people running. But also, we saw one individual able to rescue many others, save many other lives, and that image of carrying his sister, this woman, to safety. Now, can I replace the trauma with that image of compassion and love? When people have done all sorts of psychological tests and so on and so forth with people and memories, and now we have things like positive psychology, which is able to help us identify what are the positive, pure feelings and emotions that can guide us in our life. Well, what they found was that if you see an image of compassion, like the one we saw, or like others that we are used to seeing, Mother Teresa reaching out and supporting and helping, well, those images of compassion trigger within ourselves our own emotion of compassion and kindness also. And so I think the replacing of negative memories with the other side, because there's always stories of courage, of faith, of amazing support that people have given at such times. You see those faces filled with compassion and love for humanity. And I think those are the memories that we need to hold on to. The more I revisit the memory of fire and smoke, and I can almost smell that smoke every time I think about it, well, that's going to create more and more fear. But the other side, the pure positive side of human nature, which exists, and we all know that when there's a conscious moment of choice, do I go this way or do I go that way? Generally speaking, a person will be guided by their conscience. And the conscience will say, this is a fellow human being. This is my brother. This is my sister. What can I do to help them? And it's not something that you measure out at that moment. It's a very deep instinct that kicks in at that time. You know, somebody falls down, and what is your immediate instinct? It's to reach out and help them and make sure that they're well again. So I think that the more we replace memories of trauma with these memories that are positive and uplifting, the more we can be of help to ourselves and we can be of help to others. It's a very conscious decision. What is it that I want to remember? A woman that some of you know, and Judy and Nazar Bhai know her very, very well indeed, Dadi Janki, who left us just a little while ago. But she would share with us stories from 80 years ago, 70 years ago, about the experiences she had with the founder, Brahma Baba, in the days of Karachi or in the days of Mount Abu, with such vividness that we would feel that that scene was unfolding in front of us here and now. And I asked her, Dadi, how come your memory of those details is so sharp and clear that you're able to recall all of those and give us a flavor of the same? And she says, I replay those memories in my mind. I emerge them within my consciousness time and again, especially when I'm alone or especially when I'm going through a period of illness, when I have time, then that's the time I revisit and I emerge those memories. And so let me be able to do the same. Memories of love, memories of beauty, memories of truth. These are very, very powerful things for human experiences to unfold in a positive direction. The other thing, what did I learn from an experience which at that time was traumatic? And I'm sure that there are several things that we can learn from each one of the experiences we've been through. something happened and I didn't like it when it happened. It was quite an upheaval for me. And yet, as time passed on, I could see the value, the significance of that particular situation that made me learn and adjust. And I understood how I needed to be flexible, how I needed to respond in a different way. And if it hadn't been for that particular situation, it wouldn't have been this, it wouldn't have been that, and it wouldn't have been the other. And so you're able to unravel and make meaning of that situation maybe a few years later, maybe a few minutes later. And it's up to me to be able to shorten that time lag in which at first I was going through trauma, but then I began to put it into a different frame, a different perspective. The third thing is that very often something happens and I don't like it one little bit and I react to it. And yet afterwards, I understand that there was a reason that I did not see at that time for that particular situation to happen. I'm thinking about, say, for example, and I know it's not a dramatic situation like we've just witnessed, but a situation I witnessed in Paris a couple of years ago. In fact, it was probably 2015. I think that's the year when there was a terrorist attack in Paris. And we were at that same cathedral, which was in the neighborhood where the terrorists had been captured and they were living there. And when we'd driven into that neighborhood, we were going to the cathedral for an interfaith event. But that particular situation was telling. We moved from the fashionable, classy Paris boulevards and streets into a suburb, which was very run down. And you could smell the poverty there. And you could see that now it's not an excuse for any act of terrorism. But you began to get a glimpse into the lives of people who've been driven to do something as radical as that had happened. Another very simple example. I'm on the motorway and somebody flashes past at very high speed, very unsafe, and I wonder what's going on. And later I understand that although it was unmarked, it was actually somebody who was racing to give help to those people who just ahead had had an accident. And so the reaction that I felt when I saw this car moving at unsafe speed, it was, they shouldn't be doing that. And later, I understood differently. So there are these three things that are part of that whole journey of being able to explore what's going on and being able to use my consciousness in a different way to deal with things that are unexpected and unprecedented. We are living through such times at the present moment. And most people say that all of this is going to continue to increase. And yes, I can see that climate change is a factor that's going to cause trauma. I can see that huge amount of unemployment is going to cause problems. But what must I do? I think when I go deep inside and I see that which is the noble part of the self, and I draw on that and I take power from the one above, then I'm able to be of value and serve people around me in the best possible way that I can. And I agree with Nizar Bhai, it is time to go on that journey inwards and to draw and to enhance our own spiritual potential and our inner capacity. Thank you. Shall we have a few minutes of meditation to experiment with these things? Sure. Just sitting quietly. Let me go deeper and deeper within. And the deeper I go within myself, the easier it is to access that stillness in the core of my being, the sacred space where only I can enter. And I find peace. My thoughts are moving slowly. And in this peace, I find myself in the presence of the divine, the source of light, of love, of truth. I connect with this being, the being of light. And I find a sense of comfort that I hadn't experienced before. I find safety. I find protection. And in this connection with the divine, I'm filled with the power of love. And things that were bothering me before seem to melt and float away. My heart begins to heal, and I can let go and forgive. And my heart begins to see things differently. I no longer pass judgment, but I can understand and begin to make sense of what's going on around me. And the power of love allows me to broaden my vision so that I can see a human family and I can love them inclusively, seeing each one as my brother. And in this connection with the divine, I'm filled with a power that sharpens my awareness, deepens my understanding, and allows me to discern more precisely. And I can also feel that now the decisions that I make will be relevant and accurate and will be filled with benevolence for all. I hold this connection in my awareness. And I come back to the awareness of the physical dimension. And even as I step back into the awareness of the here and now in the physical world, I keep with myself. The connection with myself deep inside and a connection with the one above. Om Shanti. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Jenti. That was deep and beautiful and raised more questions. We may come back to you for some elaboration on some of that. So let me remind you that I'm going to ask Nizar to speak next, but in about 15 minutes, we're going to open up for questions. And so if you have questions, please type them in the chat. And we'll take questions for about 20 minutes. So anything in all of this that's provoking something in you, question or a shared experience, etc., if you type it into the chat, then we'll take your question. So, Nizar, a lot of your leadership experience is in the time that you described as kind of hard power. And different challenges. I mean, there were, of course, challenges, but not quite of the same character as this. And so I'm wondering if you would give us a little bit of a story of your own life, if you would. And how did you lead? How well did that work? What caused you to shift your leadership? And what is it that is strongest now when you talk to people who are in these leadership positions, what feels most urgent to you? So about 15 minutes for this.
Thank you, Judy. You know, as business people, we are always suspicious of who we partner with. They are always traumatic, you know, when we are taking over buying over other companies or merging or taking partner. And we find it very difficult to trust. So as Reagan told Khrushchev once, when they were talking about nuclear disarmaments, he says, I trust you, but I need to verify. And I think that this is what goes through every businessman's head. When I started my association with the Brahma Kumaris, I asked, most of you will know who are in business, Dun & Bradstreet, to do some research for me about the Brahma Kumaris. And that was the beginning of because my interest was great. I liked what the Brahma Kumaris were teaching, but didn't trust them. And I began with that report. And today, as you see, that the future of power that we started, and it says in partnership with the Brahma Kumaris, because we decided that they were my best partners, because I know about the world, they know about spirituality. And my life, or the success in my life, has been the result of combining my life of business and spirituality. And it has been a much bigger battle in the beginning, and then slowly it became easier and easier. But I was a totally opposite of what a spiritual life should be. That means, you know, from now I wake up at 4 a.m. to do meditation. In those days, I used to go to bed quite often at 3 or 3:30 a.m. So, totally different kind of life. And alcohol, non-vegetarian food, late nights, whatever you can think about which is not spiritual was my life. And when I started to experiment in the beginning with this, because when I heard what is known as the knowledge of the Brahma Kumaris, their teaching, I liked what they were saying, but no proof. It was just words. Sister Jayanti said some very, very good words today, but we know them as true, but you need to still experiment and make them true. You need to own what she's saying. Because until you experience what somebody else is telling you is their experience, you will not accept it. And this is what I was going through. I was going through because I was the most non-spiritual person you can imagine. And slowly as I started to experiment and started to take bits of spirituality into my life, I realized that this was making my life easier and softer and better, that I was able to run my life better, that I was able to become sane. Because in those days, what I described as leaders, two of the qualities I did not mention of leaders in the past, or what I was that we ran it with the gun. That means that constant anger and constant giving fear to people. And it's also about giving stress. When people used to ask me and say that, you know, your people are afraid of you, I used to think, that's quite right. I mean, they should be afraid. I'm the boss. I'm the owner. They should be afraid of me. But it took me a long, long time to realize that that is absolutely the wrong way to manage successfully. And also that I had a great deal of anger, and I realized that anything that you do through anger turns out to be negative. And so step by step by step, I started to change and bring that change into my life. But only after I began to experience the benefits of that change. I got ulcers when I was 35 years old because of the constant stress and the constant anger. When you are angry and yelling at people, the only one that burns is you. Everybody else has stopped listening to you a long time when you started. And when you are also under stress, not only are you not making good decisions, but you're also giving yourself ulcers. And I used to proudly say that I give stress to other people. So I think that all of these benefits, as you experience them step by step by step, you realize that these are of benefit to you. If I used to run 4 or 5 companies in those days and running around like a drunken chicken, so much stress and anger. Today, many of you know that I'm chairman of many, many companies. And I have very little stress. I'm able to make really good decisions. And above all, that I'm able to tell you today my experience of how it is to run a life without stress and without anger, and more importantly, without ego or less ego. And to make all of that successful. Because if you want to survive and prosper under these conditions which are becoming untenable otherwise, I promise you that the only sure way that you can run your life and manage it well and make decisions which are good for you and for your family and take your family forward. Not only your family, but whoever you are making decisions on behalf of. Then do what I am telling you. I'm not telling you to do what I don't do. I'm telling you that after a lot of experimentation and after a lot of not wanting to do what I'm doing today and eventually agree to do them because that were beneficial to me, that I promise you that you will prosper considerably more, without which you will not, we will not succeed. You will succeed, maybe, but it will be much, much harder. This is a much easier, softer way to do this. And the world is beginning to realize today. The fact that to talk about spirituality today is quite normal in business circles and was absolutely not normal 20 years ago, 25 years ago. That fact is also pointing towards how successful this method is. And please don't get me wrong. I'm here not talking about religion. We have to separate religion and spirituality. Spirituality is about spirits. We all are spirits. We are all brothers and sisters. We belong to one Father. There is no color, creed, religion, country, anything like that. Here, in spiritual organization or a spiritual teaching. Just imagine the three panelists here today. Muslim, Judaism, Christian, Gentilman is Hindu of origin. We hardly even think about it these days because it doesn't make any difference. We are not talking here about religion. Because religion is something that we continue to follow, to adopt, to take as part of us. We are born into that religion and we will probably die in that religion. And we are told from the time we are this high, this is your religion, it's the best religion, and that's the one you will follow. And all the other religions are inferior. And that's fine. Here we are talking about a spiritual organization following spiritual methodology. And to be successful, it has to be adopted in that I am a spirit, a point of light like a shining star. And everybody I'm dealing with and talking with are also spirits. And my Father is the Supreme Spirit. And when I have connection with Him, I become powerful and able to make decisions which are long-lasting and correct for me and for my family. Thank you for your kindness to listen to me. Judy, am I okay time-wise?
Yes, Nizar. I'm so glad I knew you now and not when you were a creepy guy.
Yes, I'm glad also, because I was not a very nice person to know.
No, you weren't, apparently. I'm so glad I met you later when you were nice. Yes. So we've teed up many things here, and I think some of your questions are going to be, okay, fine, how does this actually work? So we are going to begin to take some questions. I've got a few here that I've pulled from the chat. This conversation, we're not going to bring anyone's voices on live, but I'm going to channel some of you by, I hope, successfully. I just want to say I know that on this call we've got some of my friends are on this call, one of them who went through a really big fire and came out brilliant as a leader, and it was her spiritual practice and her determination that had her do it. I have another friend on this call from Los Angeles who, out of his cohort for brain cancer, he was the one left living, and it was his spiritual practice that did it. So there's lots of stories that are online today that are really powerful and lots of good questions. So I'm going to raise a couple of these questions to both Nizar and Sister Genti and try to get you as specific answers as possible. One of the questions that's come in is about, this one is a little complicated, so I'm going to ask it second. I'm going to ask you first kind of a simple question. And this is, it's easy to read. It's not easy to answer. So I'm going to ask both of you to take a try at it because you'll recognize this. This question is from Vicky Acevero. I hope I said your name right. What about people who have never had these experiences of love and compassion? Many have been birthed in trauma and have continued to live in violence and inequality and disrespect. How to reach people like this? So why don't we take you, Sister Genty, and then Nizar will come to you on that question.
Thank you, Judy. It was a question that had come up just recently within a small group of us who were discussing various things and how you try to give love to an individual who's been through trauma and they're not able to accept that love. Their rejection, they've been rejected by others, and so now their rejection of anything that's coming to them is very strong. Also, maybe they've been deceived, and so it's difficult for them to express love and receive love. But if I can be an instrument and take that love that comes from the unlimited source and fill myself with that and just continually, unconditionally be able to give them love, and I have seen 3 human beings who have been able to do this. I saw Brahma Baba continually give love. I saw Daddy Janki do the same. Daddy Prakash Mani do the same. So I know that as human beings, it is possible to do this. But you need to have that connection, and that love then flows through you. And it's like even if there's a stone that's constantly exposed to water, the roughness of that stone is smoothed down by simply the washing of the water over it. So go to a waterfall and find a stone and you'll find all the stones with a very, very smooth surface. The power of the water, and it's gentle water, it's not harsh, but that gentle water has smoothed away all the roughness. And so with individuals in the condition that you spoke about, it's at this moment our duty, our responsibility to be able to give unconditionally, so that we're giving that love and that respect, and hopefully at some point they'll begin to trust. Nizar Bhai spoke about being able to trust only when you've experimented with something yourself. So when you've given love continually, then the other individual recognizes this, and at some point their rejection turns to trust and they're able to absorb what you share with them.
Hey, and this is not a superhuman quality, right? We can do it.
Everyone can do it. Yeah.
Nizar, have you had anyone who worked with you who had really had a past history in which there was no love and compassion and you had to try to turn them around? Have you had that experience?
It was me. When I was very small, I had an uncle who really beat me and I had to stay with him for 3 or 4 years. And I found it very, very difficult to forgive him. And that constantly came back to me. And I was also blaming my parents for that. But I think that important thing was that, you know, that had given me, as I grew up, also a sense of low self-esteem. Because I thought it was my fault. And I think that I got out of that because I got then love from people that I should have got love from before. And I think I also got exposed to a spiritual life that turned me, so that I then started to have not a low self-esteem. But gentleman has given a very polished answer. I think that if you surround yourself by people who are caring, who are loving, I think that this will slowly, it will definitely help. And that's the only way to do this, is to expose yourself to what you didn't get before, to the opposite.
Persistent, loving, being loved and being loving. Okay, we have one question that's focused on the civil society sector and one that's focused on the corporate sector. So let me take them both. So the one on the civil society sector is from Jagad Ananda and asking, how do you balance between the mundane day-to-day problems and issues and the higher spiritual goals? And the question goes on saying, those working for social change, inequality, you know, change from inequality, change from bad governments, change from social disintegration can become quite restless and stressed. And so how do you, in that kind of a setting, bring in these higher spiritual aspirations? I can even, let me couple the two questions, because the next one says, how can corporate employees practice spirituality in their daily work? I'm not sure they're so different. So in other words, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, I get up in the morning and I meditate and I go for walks and all of that. But if you're in the, you're in the furnace of a workplace, with people who are discouraged and disenfranchised and frustrated and stressed and restless, what's the point of entry? How do you bring this in? Either of you, whichever one.
Ms. Abhay, you go first.
Okay. You know that this, what they are asking is something that we are now used to doing. I think because it's not that here is spirituality and here is us, and somehow, you know, we need to separate ourselves from here and go there and adopt it. I think that as you adopt a spiritual life, it's quite inclusive. So that spirituality becomes part of your life. So whether you are doing a mundane things or something that's extremely important, that becomes part of what you do and how you do. So the whole of the future of power is coming out of the need to adopt a spiritual life and to introduce people in 70 cities on how to do that. I think that what we have also done, for example, that we introduced the blue company concept that is against corruption and introduce companies, people to bring their companies into this, is that we are doing a kind of what he refers to as social work. But as part of our everyday life, we regard that as being eventually normal, but whether it comes out of mundaneness or not, it's not something that we think about, oh, I must do something spiritual now. It's not like that. It just becomes part of your life. That's how I have seen it happen.
Agree completely with what you've shared. And just another very simple analogy. Think about a battery, your mobile phone, for example. What happens if you don't recharge it? It won't do any of the things that it's supposed to do. And you paid a lot of money for this gadget, but it's not doing anything. But that's because you forgot to recharge it. Same thing. Each day, I need to set aside a time that's sacred for myself to recharge my own inner battery in silent communication with myself and with the one above. And if I can do this, I can recharge the power that I need to be able to do all the things I need to do, whether it's in civil society or a corporate situation, but I have the inner capacity to be able to deal with whatever may come my way. And the second thing that all of us do who are on this journey is to study something of spiritual content every morning. And morning is better than night. Any time is good, but especially in the morning, because then you're setting the compass straight. You're listening or hearing or reading some material about spiritual matters, about important human values, spiritual values. And so that's resetting the compass and things will flow smoothly from then on. The other thing is a little bit more challenging. I'm trying to fight injustice. But the fact that I'm fighting injustice is two wrongs. There's an injustice that I'm fighting, but that's also not right. And so is it possible for me to believe that if I keep a higher consciousness, then that higher consciousness is going to be able to impact whatever it is I do and make sure that things move in the right way? And I know that for sure there's an absolute guarantee in my heart, in my mind, in my intellect, that what we need is to have a world of truth and peace and love, and that is surely, definitely going to come. And it just takes, it doesn't need all of us to change in the world, that would be difficult. But it needs a critical mass of people to change, and through their change, there will be change within the world also. So I'm seeing that we're headed to a world in which there are values, in which we are moving towards a world in which really the things that we long for will again happen. So I know that a world of justice will come, but I don't fight for it. I have to elevate my own consciousness and move towards it.
That's very nice. I think you also ended up answering a question that came in saying, what are the smaller steps I can take for higher spiritual experience and connection? So you talked about making time in the morning. You talked about studying. That sort of thing are the smaller steps, right?
Yes, correct.
We can start there.
Yeah.
So Nizar, which is the power that helps you decide what you want to do in life professionally?
I think that, you know, first of all, that I know that I am capable now of making decisions which are correct because I can always go to the source. Source is that connection. And when I am in that connection, whatever decisions I make turn out to be right. Now, you can also ask me and say, how do I know that I will be right? But I'm talking about...
How do you know that you have that connection?
Yes. That connection is something that we experience by starting from the little steps. Learning how to meditate is the first step. Then you learn how to connect with the Supreme. Then you learn how to make that into 45 minutes or 1 hour or 5 minutes, whatever time you spend. But I think that experience slowly is the induction from which you learn, that all that experience then becomes slowly powerful, that you know that the decisions that you make from that experience are far superior to the ones you ever made before. And again, this is induction. And this is, you know, people like me, you know, who are used to making decisions. We make I don't know how many decisions in a day. We are constantly making decisions. But it's not that every day I sit and before I decide on anything, I do this. But I think that you are automatically doing that as part of your decision-making process. And so you are working always with a higher consciousness that we talked about earlier. And decisions just turn out to be right. Now, I cannot tell you more than that definitely because I cannot actually give you proof, but ask people that know me as to whether I make right decisions or not. And whether decisions I make are powerful and successful. I think that you also will be able to do that. And people that I know around me who are spiritual also are able to do that. And take those small steps, get to know how to do meditation, get to know how to connect. And I promise you, you will be able to make proper, solid, good decisions.
Well, I know that the Aga Khan was very happy with the decisions that you made. That's some good testimonial. Sister Jenti, you alluded to this in one of your answers, but I want to give it to you exactly. So this is from Bala Murugan. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. For 7 billion population of the world and the urgency required for course correction to save humanity, a few organizations and enlightened masters don't seem to be enough. How do we scale this transformation and reach out to leaders who can bring change on a mass scale? I'd like each of you to answer it, but I want to start with you, Sister Jenti, because your last answer connected with this. And then I want to come back to Nizar. It might be the future of power that is the method. Okay, Sister Jenti.
You know, if you think about a tray of water and you want to freeze that water, well, what they found is that as the temperature becomes colder and colder, one little molecule here and one here and one here begins to freeze. But within a very short space of time, then it's not just one at a time, but after a certain minimal number, then the whole tray freezes. And so I'm thinking about the situation where 50 years ago, when I started to practice meditation and thought that people would be interested and nobody was interested in London. And today I'm still in London, but people are interested. People want to know. It's being recommended. People are referring people to us, saying that you have to learn to meditate. This is what's going to help you. So I've seen a huge change in the climate as regards spirituality and meditation. But now I think that people are really beginning to recognize that the answers lie within. I remember being in the UN when they had the Millennium Peace Summit, and so the Millennium 2000, at the year 2000. And what they said at that time, they gave a rundown of what was happening with all the different departments of the UN, environment, labor, population, children, health, all the big issues. And all of them said, things are worse today than when we started. And the summary of all of that was, this is why we've called the spiritual and religious leaders here, because we understand that we have more resources, we have more money, we have more equipment, we have more information, we have more people. So we've got everything. But how come you're not able to tackle all these things? And it's because we don't have the will. And they were asking the spiritual leaders to reach out to their people to make sure that there was the will to bring forward a transformation in the world. So that's telling me that people are now understanding that there has to be a different approach to the problems of the world. It's not by changing the way we do things, but it's by changing the way we think. And then we're going to be able to resolve the situation.
Beautiful. Nizar, I would like you to just talk about this issue of, so, okay, there's, you know, probably a few hundred of us together on this call, on this meeting. How do we go from a few hundred to 7 billion?
Can you just repeat that question for me, please, Judy? I'm sorry, I was not.
Yes. Okay, I also want to tell you that someone who works for you has written and said you're the chairman of his company, and he vouches for all of the good things that you said about the way your leadership works.
Thank you. Nice.
But the question is, it's a question of scale, right? Because everyone, you know, in some ways we're probably speaking to those who already feel strongly about this, right? Most of the people who've joined us today probably already are open to these ideas. Yeah. But what's being raised is, how do we reach those who are not necessarily open, who don't understand what we're talking about? How do we scale this? And as Sister Jency said, it doesn't probably have to be everyone, but how do we reach critical mass? And this will be the last question.
I think that, Judy, what you said is right. You know, these are probably the kind of things that we are doing through Future of Power. You know, Future of Power is something that we go to every major city in the world, which we've done. This is our 78th one, where we get leaders in 20 different professions together. And we dialogue about what is the future of power. And that future of power, we are talking about how can we convert from the hard power to soft power. Hard power is basically money and guns. To simplify it, oversimplify. And soft power is, how can we bring spirituality into our lives and how can we make that successful? Because even world power used to be soft. It started in India and it went to so many countries. It went to Italy, it went to Spain, went to Egypt, it went to Great Britain, and is now in America. And this world power, as it traveled, became harder and harder. And now it is with our Mr. Trump, who has made it even harder, if that's possible. But the situation is that we want to bring soft power back. And that soft power is being brought back by people like us, that we want to talk about others and say, we have benefited from that. Soft power doesn't mean that we become subservient. That is not the reason, but that you get better results. You are more successful. You can take care of you, your companies and your families much better through soft power. That's why you should adopt it, and not because we are asking you to become subservient and meek, and that is the way to do things. I don't think people who are spiritual are subservient by any means. I think you will find that they are powerful and they do things in a correct way, but they are by no means subservient. So that's not what we are asking you to do. I think we all, as you get more and more involved into this, nobody is asking us that we must publicize this. But it just happens. People, once they get into this spiritual concept, they are so excited by it and they get so much benefit from it that they just want to make other people do it. This is everybody here. Those who are listening and those who are talking, we are all excited by the excitement that is in spiritual power. And I think that's the success story tells the success.
So it's sort of a movement, you might say.
I think, and it's automatic. You know, we don't go around people saying, you must publicize this. I think it just happens. People want to do it from the heart. And I think that's what happened. I told you earlier on about, you know, for somebody is pushing United Nations to bring in that 18th addition to their positive. And that is about a higher consciousness, because they believe in that. They want it to happen. Right. And so that's what they are doing. We are all doing that in a natural way.
Beautiful. So, Sister Jency, would you take us into a meditation? Give us an experience of spiritual power, if you will. And then after that, Nizar will come back for a final word.
Thank you, Judy. Just carry on sitting comfortably. You don't have to sit on the floor or stand on your head. Just carry on comfortably. For now, I go on an inner journey, going deeper and deeper within myself. And I visualize a spark of light shining in the center of my forehead. This is who I am. I am a being of consciousness. I am a being of peace. I am a being of light. And in this awareness, I connect with the divine, with the supreme. And from the divine, I receive the power of truth. And I begin to differentiate between all the different varieties of falsehood that I'm surrounded by. And with that inner truth, awake and alert within myself, I am guided to that which is true. The power of God's unconditional, non-judgmental love awakens within the soul, the highest, the purest love for all. For all my brothers in the human family, for all living creatures, all living beings, and for nature itself. And the power of love restores balance amongst all of us. And the power of peace reaches out and touches every human soul. And they recognize that peace is their inherent state of being, a natural quality of the self. And the power of peace touches all forms of life, so they feel protected and safe. And the power of peace restores harmony to nature. With this inner power within myself emerged very clearly, I come back to the awareness of what needs to be done here and now in the physical dimension. But now, with my own inner highest potential fully emerged, ready to express this in my life, Om Shanti. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Well, thank you all very much for your time too, and we very much hope that you are taking home with you something which is valuable. It is our intention to keep these going. As I told you, this is our 70th one. And in the presence of COVID, we will keep these webinars going. And probably we will have it once a month, and we hope to see you in the future. And the purpose, as I said, of the future power is that how to bring soft power back into our lives. So how to bring spirituality and make it as part of our everyday lives. So that is the purpose of this. And we all have lots and lots to learn together from this. So I want to thank you for participating in this conversation. I also want to thank our team, particularly our technical team, who spent long hours in getting everything right. So I want to say a big thank you to all of them for their time and for their expertise. And of course, our panelists today, Jenty Bend, and Judy, both of them who are speakers in their own right, very experienced, and both of them are, unlike me, I'm not a professional teacher like they are, and so I hope that it was very useful for us to have learned a great deal from both of them. Thank you all very much for your participation. Have a good remaining day or evening or whatever time it is from where you come. Thank you. And Om Shanti.